When I was a little boy, my mother often told me,
"Way, haul away, we'll haul away, Joe."
And if I did not.
Welcome to Folk Files, a podcast that attempts to shed light on the history of the folk music that has managed to survive the test of time. This episode is all about sea shanties, specifically the call-and-response style of sea shanty that became popular in the 19th century. In the background, you can hear a version of the central song for this episode, Holloway Joe. It is a recording that was originally released in 1959, featuring Paul Clayton and the Foxhole Singers, and it is a pretty typical version. When many people first hear the song, myself included, they probably imagine it first being sung by a bunch of Irish or English sailors. After all, the most popular lyrics mention Irish girls and limey ships. In reality, this song most likely has its roots in Black folk music traditions. The historic records indicate that the call-and-response genre of sea shanty exists thanks to singers of African ancestry, be they sailors, cargo loaders, or enslaved people. I say most likely because, as you may have gathered from the past three episodes, nothing is ever certain in folk music. After all, we don't have audio recordings from the 19th century that would allow us to verify our information. However, the more I researched this topic, the more surprised I am that I ever thought that sea shanties could be an old British tradition. To be fair, seafaring songs have been around for a long time, and England especially, being a place known for its naval power, has many notable songs in that genre. I found one reference to a story written down by a 15th century monk who discussed hearing English sailors chanting on board a ship, but I couldn't find the source material, so please either take that with a grain of salt or point me in the direction of that monk's account. Some seafaring songs arose in England in the 17th and 18th centuries. For example, Spanish Ladies has existed since at least 1624 and became a popular sailor song during the Napoleonic era. Here it is, sung by the Longest Johns.
Farewell and adieu to you, Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu to you, ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail for old England. But we hope very soon we shall see you again. We'll rant and we'll roar like true British sailors. We'll rant and we'll roar all on the salt seas until we strike soundings in the channel of old England. From Ushant to Scilly, it's 35.
But while songs like Spanish Ladies were associated with sailors, they weren't associated with ships. Sailors were known to sing them on land in taverns, and I would be very surprised if they didn't sing them while they were at rest on board their ships. But there is no indication that any of these songs were sung while doing work. There weren't any true shanties in the 17th and 18th centuries, despite it being a booming age of seafaring. It's hard to believe, but the golden age of shanties and the golden age of piracy don't overlap. Blackbeard, Henry Morgan, Calico Jack, and the rest didn't sing shanties. Not only that, but the British Isles do not have many historical traditions of singing while doing hard labor. They have work songs. For example, I will discuss the walking songs of Scotland in a future episode, but not a big tradition around singing songs while doing strenuous tasks. After all, most of the strenuous work was done by animals in the British Isles. But you know who did have an existing extensive tradition of singing while doing hard labor? The enslaved population in the Americas. When Africans were enslaved and brought through the Middle Passage, they brought their musical traditions with them as best they could. This was especially true of West African song traditions, which involved call and response, improvisation, and functionality, meaning that the music had a purpose related to the task at hand. The enslaved Black population would sing songs inspired by these African customs while working. It was very well documented, partially because white people tried to use those songs to justify slavery. As Frederick Douglass noted, "I have often been utterly astonished since I came to the North to find persons who could speak of the singing among slaves as evidence of their contentment and happiness. It is impossible to conceive of a greater mistake. Slaves sing most when they are most unhappy." The structure of these songs was foreign to European and white colonist ears. For example, Lucy McKim Garrison, a man from Philadelphia who collected songs in the 19th century for his book Slave Songs of the United States, said, "It is difficult to express the entire character of these Negro ballads by mere musical notes and signs. The odd turns made in the throat, the curious rhythmic effect produced by single voices chiming in at different irregular intervals, seem almost as impossible to place on score as the singing of birds or the tones of an Aeolian harp." Throughout this episode, I'm going to read a series of uncomfortable historical quotes that exoticize, patronize, and sometimes just insult the Black population. But I believe that it is important to include these quotes because they are some of the only records that we have of the Black folk tradition in the 19th century. And, as in this case, they drive home the fact that these rhythms and song structures, now so popular in sea shanties, were new to Europeans and not part of some long-standing British tradition. Here is an example of the kind of song that Mr. Garrison was talking about, recorded in 1930 and collected by Alan Lomax. It was originally a song that would be sung by enslaved people in the fields. Here it is sung by prisoners in Parchman, Mississippi, because even once slavery was abolished, it still continued to exist in the form of prison labor.
I'll be so glad when the sun goes down.
When the sun goes down.
Ed Lewis is the main singer here, and the other singers have repetitive, sometimes overlapping refrains. The main gist of the song is not hard to grasp. The singers want the sun to go down because then it will be too dark to keep working and they'll get to stop. This is very similar to the shanty Sundown Below, which I always heard was a loading shanty from the West Indies, but which may have originated farther north, since it is included in a book of songs called Slave Songs of the Georgia Sea Islands. I could find very few recordings of the song, never mind field recordings or versions by Black artists, so I'm going to have to make do with my band Music the Gathering's version.
6 o'clock, I hear them say, sundown, sundown below, time to go and get your pay, sundown, sundown below, ah, ah, ah. Sundown, sundown below, ah, ah, ah. Sundown, sundown below.
So, to summarize, by the time sea shanties started gaining popularity, the Black population in America already had a tradition of call-and-response work songs with rhythms and structures that are very similar to sea shanties, whereas the white European population did not. In the 19th century, free and enslaved Black people started working in and around ships in greater numbers in Europe and the Americas. This was far from the first time that white and Black sailors had worked together on a ship. There are records in the National Archives of the United Kingdom of Black seamen serving in the British Navy as far back as 1547. But it wasn't until the 1800s that it became a common occurrence. In the North, whale fishing became a popular and relatively lucrative form of employment among people of color. The demand for oil was growing, and whaling crews needed able-bodied men. By the time the whaling industry collapsed in the early 20th century, Black men were the majority on whaling crews. In the South, many Black laborers would screw cotton, which was an incredibly strenuous and difficult job that involved using huge jack screws to force cotton into the hold of ships. There are a lot of sea shanties that discuss screwing cotton, suggesting that those songs were originally used for that task. The first shanty that I heard that mentioned screwing cotton was Donkey Riding, which you might know from the version in Assassin's Creed.
Was you ever in Mobile Bay, screwing cotton all the day, $1 a day, it ain't good pay, riding on a donkey.
Hey, hey, away we go, donkey riding, donkey riding. Hey, hey, away we go, riding on a donkey.
I'm going to ignore the fact that Assassin's Creed Black Flag takes place in the early 1700s, before cotton screwing was occurring in Mobile Bay, because I love Assassin's Creed. Other versions of the lyrics say, "$1 a day is the white man's pay, which hints at the racial tension involved in cotton screwing. In the antebellum South, it was originally exclusively black men who would screw cotton. But the All-White Screwmen's Benevolent Association was formed in Galveston, Texas in 1866 with the aim of driving all black workers out of the profession. But black work songs had already taken root in cotton screwing. In addition to their role in whaling and cargo loading, people of color were becoming more prevalent on English merchant ships. The very first reference to modern shanty singing comes from Robert Hay's 1811 memoirs called Landsman Hay. He explained that the black sailors on board the merchant vessel the Edward were singing songs called "O Hero Me Boys" and "Grog Time of Day." Sadly, we have no idea what those songs sounded like. I am indebted to Jim McGeehan, a British folk musician and historian, for his extensive research on this topic. He references many historical records from white sailors who take note of the songs they learned from black singers, and many of those records are extremely hard to access, so I have had to rely on his secondary source. I will link his article in my episode notes, where he carefully lists a slew of 19th century references, including Richard Dana's 1830s account, where he says, "Roll the old chariot" is of Negro extraction. Here it is performed by David Coffin. In 1836, Captain Frederick Marryat wrote about hearing black crew members singing Sally Brown.
She's tall and she's dark, but she's not too shady. Way, hey, roll and go. And we roll all night and we roll till the day I go to spend my money along with Sally Brown.
Here performed by Planxty. Also in the 1830s, naval historian Leonard G. Carr says, "Loading of cotton onto ships gave seamen the opportunity to listen to slave songs and take them to sea as shanties." As an example, he mentions "Knock a Man Down," sometimes known as "Blow the Man Down." Here's a version led by Sam Lee.
As I was a-walking down Market Street,
way, hey, knock a man down,
a bully or watchman I chanced for to meet.
Oh, give me some time to knock a man down, knock a man down, kick a man down, way, hey, knock a man down, knock a man down, right down to the ground. Oh,
you get the idea. There are so many shanties, almost exclusively now performed by white folk artists, that are mentioned as having come from black sources. So why do so many of these songs have lyrics that mention British locations? The answer is the folk process. The lyrics were changed over the years, sometimes deliberately and sometimes organically. Jim McGeehan notes that Captain Frank Shaw wrote, "Since the blacks used their own jabber, the borrowers fitted their own words to the catchy tunes, often ribald and obscene. So, the white sailors who heard the songs would sometimes take the tunes and structure and use their own, sometimes spicy, lyrics." In other situations, there were more worldly, global lyrics, but they fell out of favor. For example, some versions of Holloway Joe mention a whole atlas full of places, including the Bay of Mexico, Baltimore, Hamburg, and Booble Alley, which is exactly what you think it is. Here's a rendition of the Holloway for Rosie version of Holloway Joe as an example, led by Bernard Wrigley.
Holloway for Rosie, oh.
And once I had a Leave a girl, and she was little and saucy.
Away, Holloway.
And flashy.
Away, Holloway, Holloway for Rosie, away, Holloway, Holloway
After reviewing the historical records, it's easy to see why folklorist Stephen Winnick wrote, "There has never been any real question that Black people were central to the development of this musical style." So why do we still picture white men hauling on the rope when we think of sea shanties? The answer is, of course, racism and prejudice, but to understand how we went from 19th century white historians attributing shanties to Black singers to more modern folklorists claiming those same songs for the British Isles, we have to look at the nationalist movements of the early 20th century. Anyone who studies the world wars knows that a rise in nationalist movements were partly the cause for those conflicts. Many European powers became preoccupied with their national identity and history. In England, the first folk revival was a symptom of this nationalist feeling. During the revival, which occurred roughly from 1890 to 1920, folk music collectors would transcribe and record songs from all over England. The more remote the field recording, the better. Folklorists would often already have an idea of what they wanted to find before they found it. They aimed to paint a picture of the English folk music tradition as romantic and often pastoral, with deep roots. The most famous folk music collector from this time period is Cecil Sharp. It is thanks to Cecil Sharp that we still know a plethora of old songs. But, unsurprisingly, given that he was an Englishman born in 1859, he was problematic. In 1914, Cecil Sharp released a collection called English Folk Shanties that were collected from white Englishmen. Curiously, Sharp said the shanties must have originally been drawn from the stock of peasant tunes with which the memory of every country-bred sailor would naturally be stored. It's odd that he didn't just ask the sailors where they learned the songs, and instead engaged in must-haves in his commentary. At one point, Sharp addressed, quote, "the vexed question of Negro influence." He used Holloway Joe as an example and said it was singularly devoid of Negro influence and one of our, meaning England's, oldest shanty tunes, and then gave no proof. Many folklorists cropped up during the first English folk revival, but only one appears to have discussed the Black origins of sea shanties. Frank Thomas Bullen wrote, "A great majority of these tunes undoubtedly emanated from the Negroes of the Antilles and the Southern States." This was not well received by the other folk collectors. Cicely Fox Smith, who collected shanties, dismissed Bullen by saying he had N-word on the brain. Stan Hugel arrived on the scene a couple decades later during the second British folk revival. In his Shanties from the Seven Seas, released in 1961, 120 of the shanties are described as having Black origins. It is important to note that both Hugel and Bullen were sailors as well as folk collectors. Hugel was even a shantyman himself. This was rare for folk collectors at the time and indicates that they may have had a perspective that their more armchair colleagues did not. It's a little shocking to see the full 180 that happened in terms of sea shanty attribution. For example, Gib Schreffler wrote about the shanty Lowlands Away. In the 19th century, that song was described as Negro, pure and simple, and a typical Negro shanty. But by the 20th century, it was a Scottish ballad. All mentions of Mobile Bay were scrubbed by English folk collectors, such as William L. Alden, who claimed he had improved the lyrics by changing the dollar and a half a day refrain to a repeated Lowlands, Lowlands Away. The origin of the song became so confused that Cecily Fox Smith, that same precious thing who insulted Bullen earlier, described the original lyrics as being a modern and debased version of an earlier song, which she has no evidence for. So, back to Holloway Joe, which Cecil Sharp claimed had no Black influence. In 1858, in one of the first articles about sailor work songs, Isaac Allen says two things that, taken together, are really telling. First, he says that all the music that he heard from Black workers had a dirge-like strain. Then he says that he overheard a group of Black boat rowers singing "Hey Jim Along, Josie," and noted how similar it was to the songs he'd heard sailors singing while working. "Hey Jim Along, Josie" became a popular minstrel song, so we still vaguely know how it sounds. But it's not dirgy. Here's a version by the Coon Creek Girls, an Appalachian trio, in 1950.
came along too. Folks all rise and the bell does ring, and this is the song that they will sing.
Hey, get along, Jim along, Josie. Hey, get along, Jim along, Joe. Hey, get along, Jim along, Josie. Hey, get along, Jim along, Joe.
Now, imagine the folk process. Imagine how that chorus would sound if you slowed it down to be more dirge-like, as Isaac Allen describes. Also, we've discussed on this podcast how often songs will flip-flop between major and minor. What if the song leaned in a minor direction? Might it sound a bit like this?
I kissed a little girl and a lip in a quiver. She said, way, all the way, we'll hold away. Way down in Mississippi when the boat was overflowing, the boy said, way, all the way, we can hold the way, Joe. Way, all the way, we'll hope a better weather. Way, all the way, we can hold the way, Joe.
That was Holloway Joe by Leadbelly, one of the most famous black folk and blues musicians. It is one of the earliest recordings of Holloway Joe, and I will play it in its entirety at the very end of the episode. But before I do, there's one more thing I'd like to note about sea shanties. That is the sound of the Barely Whalers from St. Vincent. They are living examples of sailors who used sea shanties for their original purpose. I was lucky enough to see them in action at the Mystic Sea Music Festival and learn some songs from them. I think it's really telling that the existing groups that still use sea shanties as work songs are black. There are many excellent historical and educational groups that put on shanty demonstrations, but when it comes to the real deal, meaning people who organically sing shanties while they work, it's mostly people of color. Another example is the Black Manhattan Fisherman from Virginia. Author and academic Maya Angela Smith wrote an article called A People's Song Upon the Waters, in which she talks about the Northern Neck Shanty Singers, a group that her grandfather performed with, composed of retired Manhattan fishermen and, in some cases, their sons. They were performing their old fishing songs regularly until the pandemic, even though most of them were in their 90s. Here's an example. The purpose of this episode is to undo misconceptions, challenge popular assumptions, and bring perspective to a genre that saw a surge of popularity in the past few years. Sea shanties have their roots in black folk music, and we can see that in historical eyewitness accounts, the context of similar songs in black history, the coinciding of the advent of call and response sea shanties with an increase in black workers on and around ships, and the existence today of a living black sea shanty culture. I believe that shanties, like all folk music, should be enjoyed by everyone, no matter their ethnicity, background, etc. But it's important to be aware of historical context and to recognize when groups of people have been systemically blocked from their own music. It's a very relevant issue. As I'm recording this podcast, Beyoncé's Texas Hold'em is holding the number one spot on the country music chart, and yet I've already seen racist outcries, similar to when Lil Nas X released Old Town Road, and one example of a country music station refusing to play it, claiming they only play country music. But as with sea shanties, country music has its roots in black folk tradition. But I'll save that for another episode, or you can check out some of the existing extensive work that's been done on that topic. I'll link some in the podcast notes, along with my research list from this episode. Thank you so much for listening. As always, feel free to reach out to me with questions or corrections at Folk Files Podcast on social media or at folkfilespodcast@gmail.com.
Way all the way, we'll always you. Way all the way, we hope a better weather. Way all the way, we'll always you. I kissed a little girl and I left in a quiver. She said, way. Way down in Mississippi when the boats was overflowing, the boy said, way all the way, we will hold away to you. Way all the way, we'll hope a better weather. Way all the way, we'll hold away to you. When the boys all get tight and some of them gonna give down.